You know, obviously, just because a religion makes you feel better, that that's not necessarily an indication of the truth. So obviously, the fruit has to be there. About her response to these people saying, you're not really saved, you don't know what you're talking about, she says, I had to pray for him. He climbs the ranks, he becomes the head of Auschwitz, and basically the implementer of the final solution in Auschwitz. It's that if children are not the objective sign that a marriage has been had, or that a male and female have come together in union, then what ends up happening is marriage becomes subjective. We all know intuitively that we would not want our own rights subject to the will of the people. Welcome back. I am your host, Daniel Roberts, and I hope that you are ready to talk about Franz Jagerstatter and Rudolf Haas. I think that's how it is. When I heard about Haas, the guy kept saying Hess. So when I first Googled him, I got it wrong. But we are going to be talking about these two gentlemen right here today. I will show you the picture of them. Essentially, they are two stories. Franz Jagerstatter was a film was made by him called, or not by him, but about him, called A Hidden Life. And Terrence Malick, he was the director behind that. It's a great movie. We'll talk about that a little bit. We also have Rudolf Haas, I believe is how you say his name. I'm not a professional. I'm just a thinker without a PhD. So you can't judge me on my pronunciation too harshly. But he was the famous first commandant of Auschwitz. And both of these guys are interesting because they were both baptized Catholic. One obviously walked away from the faith and did horrible atrocities, and the other one would not bend the knee to Hitler and ended up dying a martyr's death. So we are going to talk about those things a little bit later. First, I need to remind everybody we have a book club on our Substack that is over there at solomonscorner.com. We're going to be going through some more sacramental theology. So if you're into that kind of thing, make sure you go and find some of our posts. I still have some free comps that I can give. So if you comment on one of our Substacks and you would like to join us, just do that and I will give you a free year for our Substack paid posts. All right. So before we keep going, I do want to talk about family business, not like my family business like this is, but I do want to talk about a couple of things that have kind of cropped up a little bit since we started this podcast. When we started this podcast, we were Protestant, and then over the course of time, we became Catholic. Do you want to say something? I see my wife. I forgot to say my wife is here, but that's because she's been nagging me all day, and I finally felt like I was alone. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
The reason you feel like you're alone is because I'm hiding so
well.
It's
true. We also have to try and nail this at 60 minutes. So,
all right. No, I've got nothing to say.
Okay.
No, I'm just all ears. I'm just. All right. I've got bug eyes because I'm waiting to see what's he gonna say. Yeah. What's he gonna say?
How is he gonna ruin my family reputation?
Also, what family business are you about to dig into? As long as you know, we'll see. We'll see where this goes.
So, as a result, when we started this, we kind of were pretty free flowing and still are, obviously, but we did convert. And so as a result, some of the content has been around, some of the things that we were reading during that time. And this is not necessarily supposed to be a Catholic podcast any more than, other podcasts out there that commentate on this kind of stuff are, even though they may be Protestant or Christian or Hindu or whatever, it's just going to end up influencing some of the content. And so some of the things that we have talked about on here have been some of the teachings of the church around difficult issues like IVF or divorce or abortion or you name it. It's a difficult subject matter for a lot of people, understandably so. We're not trying to offend anybody on this show, but we are Catholic. So if we do decide to discuss something on the show that's along the lines of Catholic teaching, then we're going to talk about it as Catholics. And to the best of our ability. I'm not perfect. You're not perfect. We all make mistakes, whether you're Protestant or Catholic. You make mistakes on your theology. It's just how it goes. But the reason why I want to bring this up is because part of the reason why I did convert to Catholicism was because I thought the social teachings were not just merely opinion, but I did think that they were prescriptive and that they were good for anybody who is looking to live a life of obedience to God. And so if I become Catholic and I just kind of pretend like I'm going to be Protestant, like it's just a Catholic in name only kind of thing because I just liked the liturgy or because I just liked the pretty churches or whatever, everybody would rightly agree that that's not like a true conversion. It's like an atheist. It's like Richard Dawkins saying he wants to be Christian, but without the Bible and without any of the Jesus. And so if I become Catholic, part of my conversion is the commitment to uphold Catholic teaching. And so that doesn't mean that I don't see or hear about the people that are struggling with, you know, maybe you're a Catholic who's walked away or you had some challenges or whatever. I understand that I do not know what it was like to be Catholic back in the day. I know a lot is different these days. I see the controversies online and all that kind of stuff. But ultimately, moral teaching is important for holiness. And so I intend to talk about it in a general way. And so my goal is not to offend anybody here or anything like that. But I do want to have the freedom to advocate what I believe the church teaches and what I believe is an obligation to people. And so if you disagree with that, put it in the comments and let's have a conversation about it. Because this is a conversation. This is not a full-blown news show. This is literally a guy in his basement talking about what he feels like talking about tonight. And that's it. And that's how it is every night. And so it's a conversation. It's not a lecture. So jump in the comment section and let me know what you think. But at the end of the day, when it comes to moral teaching, the real question is, if one man's blessing is another man's sin, is revival possible? And so that's going to be one of the themes that we talk about. And so I just wanted to get that out there. I love every single one of my followers. I think all of you guys are great. Protestant, Catholic, atheist, whatever. We just got an atheist subscriber, actually. Like, shout out to you. I saw that in the comments. I hope to convert you, though. You know, you never know. So anyway, with that said, let's continue on with the rest of the show here. And all right, so we got through the family business, and now we're going to get into what is a family. Look at that segue. That's pretty good, huh? And I don't even have an ad to run like most podcasters out there do. You know, I don't have those segues down yet, you know, but that was providential right there. I did forget one other thing. That'll go away. All right. So we got these mugs, and they are coming along. I've got my Maximilian Kolbe mug, patron saint of communications and mass media. You know, they've got one for everything. They're like apps. The most deadly poison of our times is indifference. So we have St. Thomas Aquinas and C.S. Lewis. We're trying to start a saints and thinkers kind of theme over there. And if you subscribe to our Substack, you will also get a 20% discount on those mugs. So as I was saying, I was working on those like lead-ins and, you know, those segues, but I'm still a little rusty. So what is a family? And the reason why I think this is an important topic before we get to the kind of topic that was at the front of the show is that the moral issues right now that we are facing in the church especially are currently dividing us. And so this week, Trump and Carrie Lake came out with statements on the pro-life stance that they are currently having. And so this is not an endorsement of any of the candidates or anything like that, but the ideas that they are talking about have relevance on my faith, and so I feel compelled to discuss them. So here is Trump.
Under my leadership, the Republican Party will always support the creation of strong, thriving, and healthy American families. We want to make it easier for mothers and families to have babies, not harder. That includes supporting the availability of fertility treatments like IVF in every state in America. Like the overwhelming majority of Americans, including the vast majority of Republicans, conservatives, Christians, and pro-life Americans, I strongly support the availability of IVF for couples who are trying to have a precious baby. What could be more beautiful or better than that?
So when it comes to the question here around IVF, this is going to be a big, I think that that this is going to be a cultural dividing moment for Christians. And the reason why is because if you ask any Christian, Catholic or Protestant, what their position is on IVF, they will give you like 20 different responses. But the Catholic Church teaches that the contraception and IVF and fertility treatments and all that kind of stuff, you know, depending on which ones they are, They are not permissible if they remove people from the marital act. And so the reality is that if you have Christians who are being told, like, this is the moral direction you're supposed to go, you have other Christians saying, no, we don't need to go that direction. Well, we're running into a situation where we are going to have a hard time figuring out what a family even is. Because once you removed the requirement for children from marriage, like the ability, the potential in principle to have kids, that doesn't mean that infertile people, you know, if they didn't know it, couldn't be married. It's that if children are not the objective sign that a marriage has been had, or that a male and female have come together in union, then what ends up happening is marriage becomes subjective. Similarly, if you remove the marital act from the conception of children, not contraception, conception, very important, then what will happen is that now you're making family indistinct. And so there's it's just now family in name only, because anybody can have a family who can pay for a child. And so these are really important questions for everybody to be talking about. And the other thing that I wanted to say is that IVF is very much like my like little Elgato thing is like way far away. There we go. I'm like having to reach across the country. Hey, China, I need to get my. So the issue is that this is such a Trojan horse in the church that I have known people who believe in 6-day creationism and fundamentalist Christians across the board. I've had seminary students, or not my own seminary students, but fellow classmates who completely just think totally different on this stuff, but will argue for inerrancy of scripture to the T, fight against evolution, all of those things. But IVF is okay. And the thing is that while evolution could lead you to a materialist worldview, by and large, morally speaking, you don't necessarily run the risk of coming to radically different conclusions. There's plenty of on morals if you hold to evolution, because you still believe that the Bible is the inerrant word of God, and you believe that it's prescriptive and all those kinds of things. Amongst Catholics, you still believe that, like, well, what the church teaches me to live morally, as long as, you know, my evolutionary theory doesn't contradict that, I guess I'm okay. But IVF comes in, and there's not really anything about it in scripture as a technology. There's plenty about not having kids outside of God's normative prescription. There is not a situation in the Bible where somebody decides to have children outside of the way that God told them to that ever works out well. So when we are looking at how this is going to divide Christians, it's going to divide Christians. And anybody who has had to, you know, dialogue about this issue, you can feel that you can just feel the tension in there. So let's continue on here with Trump's statements.
Today, I'm pleased that the Alabama legislature has acted very quickly and passed legislation that preserves the availability of IVF in Alabama. They really did a great and fast job. The Republican Party should always be on the side of the miracle of life and the side of mothers, father, their beautiful babies, and that's what we are. IVF is an important part of that, and our great Republican Party will always be with you in your quest for the ultimate joy in life. Many states will be different. Many will have a different number of weeks, or some will have more conservative than others, and that's what they will be. At the end of the day, this is all about the will of the people.
Now, I want to talk about this because we're going to look at Kerry Lake, too. They keep saying, you know, it's about the will of the people, as if you can do whatever you want as long as you voted in. The problem with this is that you wouldn't say that now about slavery. Like if people, or for example, let's say the will of the millennials were that they wanted to euthanize everybody over 65 and take their money. Like, you would say no, because that person is a human being and they have a right to life, and you don't have the authority or the power to be able to just come in and take their life and their money and all this kind of stuff. But if everything just comes down to the will of the people, then that, morally speaking, well, whatever is morally good is ultimately what the people vote for. well, this is problematic because that's not the way that reality works, because we know that people have voted for horrible things and put elected leaders into power that have caused tons of damage. So the will of the people is not necessarily a guarantee for the prescription to be morally sound for the people at large. And in this case, you know, if we're talking about children, just swap out newborn or fetus for slave. And you realize that this kind of description, whether it's Democrat or Republican or your pastor or your great, great Uncle Joe or whatever, it's not going to hold any water, because we all know intuitively that we would not want our own rights subject to the will of the people. We wouldn't want the people to just be able to take our rights or take our churches just by fact of voting. So this is a problem. You'll see this theme with Carrie Lake too.
You must follow your heart, or in many cases, your religion or your faith.
So Disney and your church and what you ate this morning are all valid moral criteria for determining what is right and what is wrong.
Do what's right for your family, and do what's right for yourself. Do what's right for your children. Do what's right for our country. And like Ronald Reagan, I am strongly in favor of exceptions for rape, incest, and life of the mother.
And this is going to be another thing, this idea of exceptions. And the problem with exceptions is that they're really easy to grant until you meet one in real life. And so I had the opportunity to go to the Cincinnati Right to Life organization, where they brought in, I can't remember her name. You weren't there, so you can't help me. But she has a pro-life ministry that's totally dedicated. Well, I don't know if it's a pro-life ministry or a nonprofit or whatever. But her goal is to help with arguing precisely against this kind of stuff. And this idea of exceptions, that rape and incest and all these kinds of things should be exceptions where you can just kill the child. The problem is that child is still an innocent human life. And he did not, or she did not, cause their own birth. And this is a very difficult subject. This is a really painful subject, obviously, for a lot of people. But what changed my mind on it was actually meeting somebody who was conceived in rape, and who actually said that her mom basically looked at the life that her daughter had and said, "I am so glad that I did not abort you." Now, not everybody's going to have that experience. But that's not why we have children. We don't have children because we're guaranteed they're going to be lawyers and doctors and presidents of the United States. We have children because they are the inherent good that, not in out of a original sin context, but they are a good that comes from God. And even in evil situations, they're still a good. And so, especially innocent human life. And, you know, There is no way that you can morally justify the termination of a child that was conceived in rape and incest. You just can't. I don't think that you can ethically argue against that without opening up exceptions for, like, the elderly. I think that that's going to be a difficult thing. And so at the end of the day, where it gets really murky, though, is if it's the life of the mother is at risk. That one I still struggle on, but. Again, as a Catholic, you know, somebody brought this book across my desk because we have a book club on the Substack, and so I'm always looking for books. And she gave it to me, and it was this. Her name is Kyra Corbella Petrillo. You need to talk to Michael Knowles because she's Italian. I have no idea how to say that. So, but she basically she died at the age of 28. She had cancer. At one point, she was pregnant with a child, and they said that she was going to die, that the child was going to die, and she chose to birth the child anyway, and the child had an hour of life in the arms of its mother before she died. I heard another story about another Catholic from a Protestant friend of mine that they had several kids, and they found out that their child was diagnosed with some sort of genetic disability that was going to guarantee their death. And what ended up happening was she decided to carry the child to term. They brought a priest in, they baptized the child, they sprinkled the water on it, and then the baby died in her arms. And, you know, at the end of the day, I find it very difficult to think that that's not a beautiful picture of motherly love, that she's willing to go through all this pain and heartache. And oftentimes the doctors are wrong. I even have family members where doctors were trying to encourage them to get abortion because of the fact that kids were unstable in the pregnancy or whatever, and the doctors were completely wrong. And so a lot of this comes down to our overemphasis on the certainty of human sciences and thinking that they're always right. And a lot of times they're wrong. And so anyway, Trump continues.
You must follow your heart on this issue, but remember, you must also win elections to restore our culture and, in fact, to save our country, which is currently, and very sadly, a nation in decline. Our nation needs help. It needs unity. It needs us all to work closely together. Democrat, Republican, liberal, conservative, everyone, we have to work together. We have to bring our nation back from the brink, and that's where it is. It's at the brink, and we will. We will do it. I promise you, we will do it. Always go by your heart, but we must win. We have to win. We are a failing nation, but we can be a failing nation no longer. We will make our nation great. We will make our nation greater than ever before. Thank you very much.
So when we consider where this is all going, the issue becomes a problem, because what is happening is that Christians, and I've talked about this before, are losing representation. The only downside is that that video accidentally had a bunch of mute sections. I forgot that one of my scenes was muted. And so it's like, I'm talking like that. And then you can't hear the rest. So I'm just going to rehash it right here, is that because of the fact that on these moral issues, you know, and politics is about moral issues. That's what they're about. What do the, as Trump said, you know, what do the people think is morally right and morally wrong? The problem is that people aren't always right. And this is pretty evident from history. But Christians in America don't know what it's like to live as the group that doesn't have representation politically. And that is what this is going to do. There's always going to be Christians in America. The question is, are they going to be true Christians in the sense that they follow the teaching rather than what's convenient politically? You know, somebody, and we'll get into this in the Q&A, but when you consider what happened with Christ in the temptation in the wilderness, the second temptation is you can have all this political power as long as you kneel down and worship me, says the devil. Well, the issue with that is that you're not supposed to necessarily use political power in order to further the gospel. At least that's the temptation. It doesn't mean that you can't use political power to do that. It just can't be the only thing that you use. You have to be able to change hearts and minds in order to do this. But if we don't do that as churches and as Christians, we are going to lose representation. And IVF is a good example of that. Because what is happening is that these quote-unquote pro-lifer politicians are setting it up to say, hey, if you're not willing to compromise on some of your pro-life values, you know, you must not want this country united. You know, if you really care about the country, you'll sacrifice a couple babies for it. And that's not a good road for us to be on, because they are ultimately saying, we will take Christians in name so that we can keep our cross necklaces on our shirts and we can say that we're super pro-life. But if you're not willing to get behind the idea that, you know, there are some innocent human lives that, you know, you just got to kill in order for you to have that life that you want, then we're going to be in trouble. And we already are in trouble, especially as a Christian country. And this ultimately comes down to the fact that theology and morality actually go hand in hand. If you look at a lot of the denominational statements out there, very few have explicit moral teachings within them. They might say something like abortion, you know, they might have it in their catechisms and stuff, but as far as like the Catholics do, they have it in the Vatican, in the Catholic Catechism of the Catholic, or the Catechism of the Catholic Church, also known as the CCC, not to be confused with the CCP. But they do. They go through and they say, you know, these are very, very, very bad sins. You should not do these things. If you do, you need to seek confession immediately. Do not take the Eucharist. Do not pass go. You know, do not collect $200. Like these are really, really dangerous sins. And, you know, as a Protestant, when you look at those sins, you kind of think, well, I mean, like, but are they, I mean, it doesn't seem like they're that bad. You know, I mean, like, after all, grace covers a multitude of sins, you know, all this kind of stuff. You know, if somebody can, you know, have just a husband-wife relationship with no children, you know, they can do so much more for the kingdom of God. After all, isn't that what Paul says, you know? But the problem is that once we see these things manifest in the political, and everything in the political does ultimately find its root theologically, and I think that's totally valid to say, because it's ultimately about who are you going to serve? Are you going to serve God, or are you going to serve yourself? That's basically the ultimate question put forward to every single human being. And so when we decide that we're going to basically just say, well, theology is all that matters, and, you know, this person has this moral thing, and this person has this moral thing, you know, we disagree on IVF, we kind of disagree on the pro-life stuff, we kind of disagree actually even on what conception even means. Like, we, you know, is it when it implants or is it when it fertilizes? You know, we don't really know, and so everybody is absolved because everybody's ignorant. But that makes it impossible to attain holiness, because if obedience is not actually attainable, because morality is ultimately subjective, it's whatever you think is right, it's not what an authority prescribes, well, then we're going to find ourselves in a world where there's no moral grounding, and that's what's happening. And if that happens, then the politicians are going to go wherever they can get the votes. And I think that's what's happening here with Carrie Lake and Trump. So let's see what Carrie Lake has to say.
This total ban on abortion that the Arizona Supreme Court just ruled on is out of line with where the people of this state are. The issue is less about banning abortion and more about saving babies. I agree with President Trump. This is such a personal and private issue. I chose life, but I'm not every woman. I want to make sure that every woman who finds herself pregnant has more choices so that she can make that choice that I made. We as American people.
Real quick. So you might be thinking, oh, she's trying to say like you should have more choices. But if you watch the whole clip, and I couldn't because it's like 5 minutes long, so I've got this kind of cut up so that with highlights for us to talk about. But as she goes through this clip, you're going to see that what she's trying to do here, it seems to me, is kind of as all the politicians are. They're trying to figure out this way through to try and keep the pro-lifers while not losing some of the moderates over here. And they're trying to figure out how to unite those two, and they're not going to be able to do it because the pro-lifers have put blood, sweat, and tears into this stuff. Some of them are going to jail for this kind of stuff. If you start saying to them, you know, well, I don't, you know, I know that you're super passionate about this, but, you know, we got to have some choices, you know, safe, legal, and rare. Remember that? Yeah, that's what the pro-choice argument used to be. And so the problem is that this argument is ultimately just a rehash of what abortion used to be. We know that it leads to a slippery slope, because as long as it continues to get votes, it's going to continue to widen that access to abortion. And by the way, this is all in the context, by the way, where we have a birth rate that is below replacement. So this is the other crazy thing. Like the pro-life argument is super easy right now. Guys, we're not having enough kids. We're not going to have a country. Like you've got to have kids. I mean, that's the argument you make. Hey, look, I know you might feel like you've been gypped here, but you know, your infrastructure is going to start to fall apart if we don't start having more children. You're not going to be able to actually put men and women into the military. You're not going to have enough of them. You're not going to be able to actually, what's the word that you would use? Can't remember, but supply. What's the word? You know what I'm talking about? Like
furnish.
I don't know. I can't remember. You're not going to have a standing army, basically. Yeah. You're going to run out of people. You're going to run out of soldiers. Yeah. This is a super easy argument to make. Like you don't have to, it is easy to make, because if you have more people, then you have more infrastructure. Even Elon Musk is making this argument. Jordan Peterson is making this argument. Richard Dawkins is, in some sense, making this argument when he says he doesn't like seeing 6,000 mosques being ready to be set up in London. The argument doesn't have to go this direction. You can start to actually warn people and say, listen, we actually have to have more children, which I think is what Carrie Lake is trying to do here when it comes to what she's doing. But I think, again, it's ambiguous on purpose. And so she continues later on. I cut it out, but she does talk about the fact that Hungary has like this bill, and she calls it like a bailout for families, which, you know, yeah, incentivize it. And so, again, these, it's really hard to know exactly what is going on in the pro-life movement, because people are trying to make sure they stay in power, because if they lose that power, then they can't do anything for you. The question is this the actual right way to go? And that's the only time will tell.
Don't agree on everything all of the time. But if you look at where the population is on this, a full ban on abortion is not where the people are. The issue is less about banning abortion and more about saving babies. And we can do that. We are only as...
Now, this is where it doesn't make sense, because a ban on abortions would save babies. So she has to make the argument that not having a ban on abortion is going to save more babies, which, you know, I just don't know how that works. So somebody can explain that in the comments.
As our greatest institution, which is the family. That's called a baby bonus. I think we should do that here in America. We bail out banks and multinational corporations all the time. When's the last time we've given an assist to a struggling mother in a family? So many young people are saying, I don't ever think I could become a mother or father because, heck, I can't even afford to get by on my own. How would I ever become a parent?
Which, this is where I think you see this kind of strategy, because politicians make promises all the time that they don't keep. So that's the question. Is she making a promise to the pro-choicers, or are they making promises to the pro-lifers? We just don't know. Because one of the things that could come out of this is that you just decide, well, I'm going to, you know, we're going to have this incentive for these kids, you know, families that, you know, have more kids and more kids, you know, they're going to get a tax break, like a big tax break. Well, that's good. And then people just forget about this stuff. Great. That's fine. That'd be good. But the problem is are they actually going to be able to, are they going to make so many pro-lifers so mad that they just don't turn out to the polls, which would be an interesting question that only time will tell.
Into politics because I thought it was going to be easy. I'm okay with the difficult parts. And right now, we're in that part where we need to work through this issue. And thankfully, as we're working through this issue, it's not just going to be the abortion extremists calling.
Now here's the part where there's this subtle kind of, don't you care about America? Don't you care? Or are you so pro-life you don't actually bleed red, white, and blue? And this is the concerning part.
Shots. People who are pro-life have the ability at this moment, thanks to President Trump, to be involved in this process, to come up with policies that will work to help women and save babies. We're going to work through this. And on the other side, we're going to come out much better for it. They want this issue to bring down our country. They want Americans at each other's throats. And this issue has the ability to bring down our country or help save our country. And I want to help save our country.
So that's a problem. Because if you caught it there, what she's saying is that the pro-life issue could actually divide the country. It's no longer the abortionists, it's the pro-lifers. Because, you know, if you're not willing to give up a couple of those innocent lives, you know, just a couple exceptions, that's what we call them, the exceptions, you know, well, then, you know, you're probably not Team America. Because if you want this country to stay together, then you're going to have to be willing to give up some of your principles and stuff like that. The problem is that the principle of life is the foundation for all the other rights. And people will sit there and say, well, that's cliche. And, you know, well, show me another right that's going to prevent the genocide of millions of people. If you can show another right other than the right to life, that's going to prevent Auschwitz. It's going to prevent the genocide of more babies than, you know, any other Christian country to date, you know, well, then show it to me, because I don't know what it is. Life is the foundational piece. And so when we say, well, ultimately, I want that life to be snuffed out so that my life can be better, even if that life could bring suffering and difficulty and all these things. This is one of the beauties of the gospel, is that Mary, when she had Jesus, it's not like she had a good life. She had a difficult life. She was, you know, Jesus was born into poverty. And so the idea that, you know, life was just easy for Mary and so she just had it easy, it's like, well, not really, you know. And so at the end of the day, you know, it's a question of what is the moral right way through here. And this is where the church has to come in, because everybody's got a cross to bear. Some crosses are way heavier than others. And so this is an area where, again, and I think the church, especially after being Catholic, find out how many Catholic ministries there are. My gosh, you know, and even when I was Protestant, you know, the reality is I did not know of a single church that I attended where if a woman came in a crisis pregnancy, that she would not find support there through either clothing or babies or baby diapers or the food or any of those kinds of things, even helping them find jobs. Like, there are plenty of resources and churches are willing and able to help. And that's the other piece here. Again, like, you've got this huge Christian movement. Like, this is where the politicians could really like motivate the churches. Like, hey, I need you to help with these babies. We need you to help where these moms need help. You know, get like, that's where I think you make the argument. But when you actually ask pro-lifers to compromise on stuff where they have, you know, suffered real loss, careers or even in some situations being forced to go to jail, like these are serious issues that you know people aren't going to just like turn out to, oh, okay, yeah, I guess you're right, you know. So anyway, ultimately, when we consider where things are currently, if the conservative Christians no longer have a voice in the public square, they're going to be excluded from that because there won't be any political incentive for them to be able to govern or to influence political power. And so that ultimately leads to a Christian ghetto and an echo chamber. And you're starting to see some of these things already manifest when people are online and social media. You know, you can't post stuff like Michael Knowles, we'll talk about it in a second, you know, the interview he did with this former OnlyFans woman, he, you know, it got throttled on YouTube. I mean, in fact, I might get throttled on YouTube just for talking about it, because we're going to play like a couple clips from it. But ultimately here, she's right that the family is the fundamental unit. And Trump was the only one who actually said, you know, between a mother and a father and having their child. The problem is that if they open up the gates on IVF, I don't see any way that they can guard against the idea that marriage is just between a man and a woman, or that children are have the right to a mother and a father. That's where things are going to be really murky, and they're opening Pandora's box here. And just like abortion, it's going to be real hard to put it back in. And so, you know, just to wrap up on this, you know, in the book by Patrick Coffin, Contraception Deception, there's a case in there that talked about a 5-person child. There are 5 people involved in the creation of this child. And it was, I believe it was 2 gay men, a surrogate woman, and a heterosexual couple. And they took the eggs from the woman in the heterosexual couple and the semen from the male. And then they used the uterus from the surrogate, and they used IVF to fertilize the child. And then after the child was born, they gave it to the gay couple. And then the gay couple decided that actually they were not going to stay together anymore. And there was this question of whose child was it. And during the court proceedings, I believe she was like 8 years old. Nobody could decide. Nobody wanted the child. And the court ruled that the parents were not capable of being determined because of the biological circus that had occurred in the conception of her life. So she went into the foster care system. Now, how is she going to grow up? Like, 5 people involved in her conception, bringing her into the world, and 5 of them don't want her? You know, these are the kinds of things that IVF opens up for potential evil that we really can't wrap our mind around, because that's what technology is doing. Technology can bring about goods we never thought we could have. It can also bring about some pretty horrendous evils. And if we don't unite our theology to a moral objectivity, then we're ultimately going to remain divided, and we're no longer going to have political power. And so I think that this is a really important issue. But now I want to move on to, are there limits to forgiveness? Did you have something you want to say?
No, I'm just loving this.
Okay, there you go. Yeah, find you a wife that will listen to you in your basement.
I was actually thinking about this because you said you're in the basement, and I was going to say, at least it's not your mom's basement.
That's true. It's just my wife's basement. Yeah. 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 She's the one paying all the bills, but I'm making all the money. So Michael Knowles had this interview with this, I don't know her real name, but her stage name is Nala or whatever. And she was a porn actress or whatever. And anyway, this is a clip of what that looks like.
I was a pastor's kid. It started slow. I started OnlyFans. I made like $85,000 the first month.
What was it about you that was able to make $1 million a year?
My biggest thing that I sold was that I'm multiple girls. I put all of that energy into creating Nala.
How much money do you have at this point?
$9 million. My parents kind of disowned me.
That sounds catastrophic.
Sorry. I've never really dove into that feeling. Yeah. Never talked about this. What's the point of all this money when I don't have feelings?
Is that the moment where you say, all right, I got to start getting out of this thing?
I was sobbing. I was looking at my fireplace. I grabbed the Bible. I was like, God, I need an answer now. I truly need an answer now. And he gave me an answer.
What did he say?
So anyway, he has this conversation. It's super long. And I don't think that it was, you know, it was interesting. But, you know, it's kind of standard, you know, prodigal conversion story. It's really powerful. It's amazing that she, you know, decided to walk away from it all. But understandably, some people are saying, you know, well, this seems like it's staged. It seems like, you know, that, you know, she's just doing this for, you know, Christian celebrity money or whatever. You know, that happens. It's America. It's kind of a sign that you're actually in a prosperous country that you can do this. You know, you can walk away from these horrible things and start your life over. Can't really do that in countries where there's not a lot of money. So, you know, take your pick. But outside of that, some people are saying, you know, that she can't be saved. You know, she is beyond the grace and mercy of God. Now, that's a problem, because if you read the Gospels at all, Christ was very clear that, you know, people like her are who he came to die for. It's not the sick. It's not the healthy that need a physician. It's the sick. I mean, Jesus got in trouble for sitting down, obviously not with cameras and stuff like that, but sitting down and having conversations with prostitutes and the poor and the sick and the degenerates of the society. And so, you know, this is a problem if you're sitting here saying that you can't do that. And this is all over Twitter. Like, I don't even have to like go very far to find it. And Michael Knowles and her talk about some of those individuals. But there is a big difference between a grifter and somebody who can't be redeemed. So she's definitely immature. Yes, there's no doubt about it. She was like baptized like 2 weeks ago. And I just saw like a clip that was very close to her baptism that obviously would scandalize any church at all. But the problem is that Christianity, and this is the concern. Ultimately, what people are concerned about is, you know, they're sick and tired of people coming in and just acting like, well, you know, I can just say a prayer and it's all gone. It's all gone. And I've met people where that's happened. I know people, though, who have been in ministry and they've done ministry with individuals and, you know, they relapse into sin. You know, they do that. That's why it's important, I think, that this kind of like all you got to do is believe is a problem, is because, you know, there are plenty of other stories of people who have sentimental conversions to other denominations. They walk away from all this stuff too. You know, people who have, you know, talk about conversions to Islam in the prisons. That was a big deal when I was in seminary, that, you know, there were these prison ministries for Christians, but they also noticed an uptick in Islam going into the prisons and converting guys out, and they would walk away from a life of crime. So, you know, obviously just because a religion makes you feel better, that's not necessarily an indication of the truth. So obviously the fruit has to be there. And later on in this interview, she says that she's going to try and start a TikTok agency with her new husband. You know, they announced it during this interview. And again, these are all red flags. Okay. Like, I mean, like, you know, you're just getting married. You're like hitting every single thing. Well, once you run out of things to do, and now you just got to be a Christian. That's the question, you know, and chances are we probably won't hear about it unless, you know, one of these, you know, red pillars decides that they're going to try and grift off of that. You know, ultimately you've got grifter A saying you're a grifter and the other one saying, I don't know. But the thing about her response to these people saying you're not really saved, you don't know what you're talking about, she says I had to pray for him. Now, sure, like, could she be lying? Yeah, but what does she have to say in order for you guys to actually believe her? That's the other question here. It's like, what do you actually have to, what does somebody in her shoes have to do in order to prove that she's really sincere, especially in the era of the internet where you can dig up any photo, any comment, anything on her and say that it was from this time and nobody has the time to fact check or verify or whatever because we all have different lives that we're trying to live. But this is why it's important to understand that she could always still walk away. I do not believe in eternal security. You know, just because, you know, Judas, you know, we don't know where he ended up. But none of us wants to take the risk of Judas because we know it is a risk that some, that hell is not empty. And so at the end of the day, she can still walk away. She might walk away. You don't know. But at this point in time, she probably just needs to, as one of my friends said on Twitter, you know, she just needs to kind of get off the grid. Like, that'd be good for you. Yep, get off the grid. Good idea. That's a good idea. But there's a big difference between saying someone's a grifter and saying that they can't be forgiven. Because the Our Father says, forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. And if we are not able to forgive those people, then we are ultimately holding up a big stick against ourselves. And once you start to say that, you run into a problem. And so there's another story that comes out of World War II. And this is what we started with at the beginning, the martyr and the sinner. Now, this is a very controversial story. And I have learned that this is a regular story around, not necessarily Franz Jagerstatter. I'm not sure if I'm saying his name right, but doesn't it sound good? Jagerstatter, you know? What did you say?
Oh, I didn't say anything. Okay. I was just about to praise you because I think you pronounced it beautifully.
But thanks.
I also know no German, so, yeah. You know.
She knows French, though.
The blind leading the blind, yes. Here. Yeah.
But then you also have Rudolph, who's one of the most evil people to have walked the planet. And the interesting thing about this is that both of them are tempted. And Franz Jagerstatter has a movie that was made of him, and it's called A Hidden Life. And I'm just going to play the trailer real quick for you.
I had a dream. I thought that we could build our nest high up in the trees. Fly away like birds to the mountains. Loyalty to Hitler.
Do you think your defiance will change the course of things?
I can't do what I believe is wrong. We have to stand up to evil. What's happened to our country? To the land we love?
You cannot say no to your race and your home. You are a traitor.
I'm with you. Always.
Now that's a good movie. So if you haven't seen that movie, you just need to drop right now. You just need to go get it. It's worth every penny. It is about Franz, and he's up, I believe, for canonization as a saint. And the reason why this is such a good, I think, example for what we're talking about today is because, you know, ultimately, Rudolf Hess comes in and after the Nazis are basically conquered, he's on trial. And that's that picture that you see in this original shot right here. That's Rudolf on the right. He is Haas, I guess you would say. And he is on trial at the Nuremberg trials, you know, the famous trials that basically said, you know, you guys violated laws above the German laws. And his concern apparently was that he was going to go to jail and he was going to be treated as bad as the rest of the, as he treated the people in Auschwitz. And this is what he said before he died. In the Polish prisons, I experienced for the first time what human kindness is. Despite all that has happened, I have experienced humane treatment, which I could never have expected and which has deeply shamed me. I have inflicted terrible wounds on humanity. I have caused unspeakable suffering for the Polish people in particular. I am to pay for this with my life. May the Lord forgive me one day, forgive one day what I have done. And the reason why this is a tough topic is because everybody, when they hear about what happened, because he ultimately comes back to God, and I'll tell that story in a minute. You know, he was in charge of Auschwitz. He eventually, you know, joins the Nazis early on. He climbs the ranks. He becomes the head of Auschwitz and basically the implementer of the final solution in Auschwitz. And while there, you know, millions and millions of people die. And there's a priest, and I can't remember his name. I should, but he's a Jesuit. You know, the Jesuits were, you know, if you read a Jesuit from the 50s, man, they really are admirable Christian men. And so a Jesuit snuck into Auschwitz to give mass to the prisoners. And apparently Haas found him and didn't kill him and let him go. After he is arrested, Haas, that is, you know, he is put in prison and people treat him really well. And he comes to the realization that he needs forgiveness, that he needs confession. And I want to talk about, as we're going through this, I want you to think about the difference between Haas's confession, which is going to be along the lines of the Catholic sacraments, and this idea that somebody can just go to a church, get baptized, and boom, they're in the club. And the reason why I think that this is important is because the sacraments actually bring to the fore the mystery of contrition. We don't know if Haas was truly contrite or not, if he just says, I believe. But he begins to request a priest before he dies, because he was baptized as a Catholic and he wants to do this, but they can't find anybody who speaks German. And so finally they find one, and it's the priest that Haas could have killed but didn't. And Haas gives, and there's, you know, variations on this story, but bottom line is that this is the priest who comes in and hears his confession. Apparently the confession was for hours and hours and hours. And you know, just Google this. It's a pretty crazy story. You know, I'm skipping over some facts. And he gives Haas his last reception of the Eucharist, Viaticum, and then Haas goes and is hung at the gallows. In fact, the gallows, if you go on the Wikipedia page, are still there, where he died. And the question is he still in heaven? Did he go? Did God actually forgive him of his sins? And that's an uncomfortable question, because we see all the millions of people that he killed, and we want there to be a limit to mercy, because, you know, if we can blame one man for Auschwitz, that's a lot easier than recognizing that that one man was forged in a culture that was basically demonic because of the will of the people. So the issue is, well, who does Haas just represent himself? It's not like he came down in an alien spaceship and said, let us make Auschwitz and let's just kill everybody. You know, this is the slippery slope. You know, people like to say the slippery slope fallacy. It's like, well, obviously people don't just wake up one day and find concentration camps. So we know that in some sense there's something slippery, just might not be the slope. Maybe it's our will. We don't know. But maybe that's what we should call it. The slippery will fallacy. You know, it's not a slippery slope. You're just a slippery guy, you know. But then we look at a quote from Gordon Zahn, who was the biographer for Franz. And he went and visited Franz's local town and started asking him, you know, this is a pretty crazy story. You know, Franz wouldn't take an oath to Hitler. He ends up in jail. There's now a movie about him. You know, it's a beautiful story, but it's a painful story. And Franz says, this is what the people say about Franz when the biographer starts to research his life. Franz Jagerstatter is generally remembered kindly, even lovingly. This does not mean that the villagers were ready to give any significant approval to his actions, though. Few were willing even to entertain the possibility that he acted as a man in his position should. Yet almost everyone I approached began with unquestionably sincere assertion that he had been a Leibe Mensch, a wonderful guy, and that his death was a terrible tragedy. Now, the thing that is interesting about this is that no one wanted to say he did the right thing. In the same way, nobody wants to say that Hoss had his sins forgiven. And I think that this highlights a situation when there are really bad atrocities. We want a name to the face. We want the criminal. We want them to get what they deserve. And that's that desire and that thirst for justice. But at the same time, we also have to recognize, well, are there limits to mercy? And if we judge Hoss and say, well, God can't forgive him. He can't forgive him. Well, who produced Hoss? Is God going to look at them and say, well, you didn't have any fault? You know, that time that you could have helped the Jews and you decided not to because you were afraid of Hoss? I'm going to let that one slide. Or what about the fact that some of these kids that grew up to join the Nazis may have persecuted Jews because their parents said that it was okay? Is that, or they didn't stop them at least. You know, they just let it happen. Did that have an impact on Hoss and what he did? You know, it's pretty clear that God judges nations as well as individuals. And right now, we're in a moment where Christians are afraid to speak up. They're afraid to speak up at their jobs. They're afraid to say what they believe is true, not just for themselves, but for what God intended. And they're going to places like Disney World and saying, ah, I know that Disney doesn't really like Christians, but, you know, it's a great place for kids. Yeah, but they hate your faith. They don't want you to have a place in the public sector if you're going to say that gay marriage is a sin. Or what about YouTube? You know, I'm a small channel right now, but if I could get flagged just for that. Hey, you can't say that. And now, you know, what platform is my best platform suddenly is gone because I've decided to say what I know to be true, that marriage is between a man and a woman. Or what about people who say, you know, it's not really that bad. You know, we're not in that bad of a culture. You know, people are just blowing it out of proportion. I mean, that guy lost his job. He should have lost his job. I mean, why would you even say that at work? You know, well, what did he say? Well, that a man is a man and a woman is a woman. Well, what's wrong with that? I don't know. I mean, I guess the reason why he said it was because his daughter got hurt in a soccer match because a boy decided to come in and play against her. But, you know, I mean, he can keep that to himself. The reason why Hoss is a challenge for Christians is because we know that cowardice is what produces evil men. And people like Franz, we don't like them either because they're an example of what happens when you do the right thing. Both men, in a very short period of time, ended up dying. One at the beginning, roughly, of World War II, maybe right in the middle, and one at the end. I mean, a matter of like 6 years. And in terms of eternity, that's not very much. So how are we supposed to answer this? Like let's say we assume that Hoss is actually in heaven. How can that be just? Well, part of this is that there has to be rewards in heaven. Nobody wants to talk about that. Everybody wants to talk about this moral indifference. But it's very clear from Scripture that, like, outside, beyond even salvation, there will be rewards in heaven. That what you did here is going to store up treasures in heaven. Store up treasures in heaven where moth and rust do not destroy. Don't store up treasures here on earth. Well, how do I become holy? Well, it's pretty clear from the epistles that you do that through obedience. Even the Bible says, you know, I don't desire sacrifice. I desire obedience. Obedience to what? Whatever you ate that morning? You know, when we look at guys in the military and we look at what they do, especially if you've ever watched Band of Brothers or anything like that, or you've watched any World War II movie, and you know that these guys, especially guys who were dealing with racism during that time, they loved their country and they fought for it anyway. They had bad generals. They had bad leaders. They had abusive leaders who made their life-threatening jobs difficult. And they didn't defect from the military. They stayed in the military. They stayed loyal to the institution. They didn't abandon it. They stayed the course and focused on the mission because they understood that the mission was only going to be attained by an institution. It wasn't going to be attained by them just going off starting their own military. That would be impossible. But there are plenty of people who have done that. But if everybody had gone and said, you know what, forget this. We don't need to help out those people over there. We don't need to do any of this kind of stuff. We wouldn't have had stories like Band of Brothers. The world would look very different. And so when we consider, okay, well, what makes, you know, this kind of at least somewhat settled in our minds? First and foremost, there has to be some concept of rewards. Franz was the better Christian, hands down. Like, it's not even close. And Haas, well, we won't know until we get there. But what ultimately ends up happening with Haas is that his conversion is ultimately a stumbling block to the Protestant and foolishness to the world. The Protestant says, you know, there's no power in the sacraments. It doesn't matter. Okay, well, then those same Protestants are often, well, not those exact ones, but when you say, well, this person who is in the porn industry and all this kind of stuff, she just woke up one day and after picking up her Bible, decided she was going to be a Christian, went and got baptized. Is she a Christian? Well, you know, we got to kind of wait. We got to kind of wait on that one. Okay. Well, what about a guy who went to confession for hours and hours and hours? There's a priest there who's heard this. The priest is now making a judgment about whether or not this person should receive the sacrament, the body and blood of our Lord Jesus Christ. And Christ himself said, you know, if you do not eat my flesh and drink my blood, you do not have life in you. And so what ends up happening with Haas's conversion is that the mystery of contrition suddenly starts to come into focus. This, well, how powerful is this mercy? Because we're looking at it through the sacraments, not just through somebody claiming that they are now saved. We know that those sacraments have an objective purpose. They are a sign of an effective grace, a grace that happens every time. And we don't know if Haas's conversion was sincere. But the sacraments force us to have to wrestle with his conversion much harder than some random OnlyFans girl online. And when we consider what St. Paul says, I think it's applicable here. For now we see in a mirror dimly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, then I shall know fully, even as I have been fully known. St. Paul, former murderer of Christians. And so for those people out there who think that, you know, at the end of the day, nobody can be saved. You know, there's a limit to sins. You know, ultimately, if you rack up a high score, you know, you get that achievement, you're out. Life is short and eternity is a lot longer. And the way you answer that question depends on which one you feel more, eternity or the present. And so anyway, so let me know what you think. Do you think that Franz was the better guy? Do you think Rudolph, do you think he's in heaven? Let me know. Let me know what you think about what I just said. We're going to get into questions now. And before we do that, I've got a couple more questions that came in. So appreciate you guys sending those or asking me over the phone or whatever. I really do appreciate it. Make sure you check out Rugged Rosaries. You get a promo code for 10% off. So before we jump into the questions, make sure you check these guys out. They are really great. They're based out of Texas. And I just really enjoy their rosaries. You need to give them a good look. They're really durable. They make them with like paracord and all that stuff. What did you say?
I just wanted to add, we are not getting a kickback for these.
Yeah, mugs. We don't get a kickback.
This is not for it's true. Our own.
We do get a kickback if you buy these awesome mugs, though, but I don't want to cross brand. So right now we're talking about rosaries. So make sure you do that. 10% off. Support people, the small businesses like that. I think it's really important, especially now when we need so much prayer. All right, so we're going to go to question number one. Suppose that technology existed that removed the act of sex but still produced the child without any collateral abortions. Would this kind of IVF still be permissible? And the answer is no. And this question, you know, is ultimately based on what do you think sex is for? Is it, and also what do you think fertility is? Is it a disease that needs to be cured? Or is it a state of life that God has for a person so that they can ultimately do his will somewhere else? That those are important questions. But outside of that, even the process, it's not merely that the loss of embryos is the only evil that's occurring. You know, the whole process is, usually when these questions are asked, it's generally something, it's not that people aren't smart, but they're just not aware of the process. You know, the stress on the female body is very, very, very hard. They're pumped with hormones. I've known people who have gone through this that I worked with at one back in a past life. It's a very, very difficult procedure. I've known a lot of people who have either gone through IVF or gone through surrogacy, and it's a challenge on the whole couple, the whole time. And this is a lot more prevalent than you would think. I mean, I've known people who are at ministries who are doing surrogacy to actually pay, to actually afford to do the ministry. Like this is a serious problem. And so there's a lot more that goes on in this whole process. And one of them is just the prudential side of things. Like the moment you say, hey, you know, fertility is a disease that we need to cure. Well, with technology, well, now what you've done is you've opened up the door to the fact that, well, if we can cure it for infertile couples, why can't we cure it for homosexuals and lesbians? Why can't we do that? That's a real problem. And so you're going to run into an issue on that on that subject just from a practical political standpoint. If you take the morality out of it for a minute and you just say, okay, well, politically, what kind of laws are going to come for this? It's a real issue. But secondly, children are not supposed to be conceived by virtue of technology. They're supposed to be conceived by love. And so if you divorce the act of marriage, which is what it is, this is the consummation of marriage that is objectively verified by the presence of a child. And children are not just a political unit or a biological unit. They're a spiritual unit. They are incarnate beings. We're not just sacks of meat. We don't have to just, you know, it's not like we need a mom and a dad just so that we feel good. It's because that's the way God intended for this to happen. Thirdly, there are sins involved, like masturbation, that have to happen in order for this process to occur. And this ultimately gets at, well, what do you think, you know, if in this area, which by the way, you even have biblical justification and natural law justification to say, yeah, it's probably, if you're just a betting person, you shouldn't actually go through with these processes because, you know, if sin really could lead to death, if there really are such things as mortal sins, you know, which you won't know until you get there, then, you know, we probably want to, you know, err on the side of caution. And so when we limit it down to just one-to-one, yeah, you've eliminated, you know, some of the collateral damage, just become a lesser evil in some sense. But it also forgets that you can't start off with one-to-one because technology has to be iterative. And so, like, you have to start with losing a lot of children so that you can develop this technology. And the question becomes, okay, well, let's say we continue to develop this technology and we actually get better at having babies outside of the womb rather than in it. What's to say that moms and dads now have to actually have children by the natural processes and not adopt the Baby Maker 3000 that they put in their garage? This is a legitimate concern down the road. And people always say, well, slippery slope. Well, if you could, hypothetically speaking, develop a technology that required zero pain, zero consequence to the mother and the father, and they could just have children without the marital act, why should they have children with the marital act? Why not just do it the easy and expensive way? So that's how I would answer that one. But you guys let me know. Like, what do you think? And then we've got another question here. Biden claims to be a good Catholic, but his policies don't align with Catholic teaching. Some Catholics have said that he separates his Catholic beliefs from his political strategy to maintain a separation of church and state, but also because strategically he saw an opening in the Democratic Party and is just representing them even though their platform is anti-Catholic. What do you think of this argument? Similarly, if Trump is doing the same thing, can Christians justify voting for him if he is doing the same thing with the Conservative Party? So this ultimately is, I don't think works, because like we were saying before, you know, the devil approaches Christ and says, hey, if you want, you can have all these kingdoms. And Christ is on a mission, okay? He's on a mission to spread the good news. And, you know, and I think it's a valid interpretation to say, well, the devil is offering Christ a shortcut to accomplish his mission here. And it's an implicit, are you going to do the will of the Father? Or are you going to do what I'm presenting to you? And ultimately, you know, Catholic teaching matters, not because Biden is supposed to be some sort of theological dictator, but because Biden should want to go to heaven. Like, his soul needs to work out its salvation with fear and trembling. And how can he do that if he's allowing himself to use political power to advocate for things like abortion, to advocate for things like, you know, the student loan forgiveness and those kinds of things? Like, how can he do those kinds of things if ultimately he is a Catholic? You know, now I know some Catholics will be like, well, student loan forgiveness isn't a big deal. That's okay, fine. We'll give you that. But at the end of the day, on abortion or gay marriage or any of these issues, he's claiming to be a Catholic. And here's the deal. Like, Catholics are held to a higher standard than more than any other denomination. Just look at the fact that everybody still remembers the Catholic sex scandals, but everybody's forgotten about the other denominations that had just as much. So, you know, well, not maybe not just as much, but certainly enough to warrant criticism and public, you know, condescension and notoriety. So being a Catholic, if you're going to claim you're the one church that Jesus founded and you're not going to follow the rules of that church, well, then, you know, you're held to a higher standard. I think you're in the wrong. Now, on the subject of Trump, you know, can you still vote for Trump on these kinds of things? Because Trump is saying that he's a Christian, you know, all this kind of stuff. Well, nobody knows what kind of Christian Trump is. And the word Christian now has, at this point in America's history, has lost all its meaning. Somebody says they're a Christian, they could literally be saying that they're pro-choice, pro-evolution, pro-gay marriage, and pro-government mandating a vaccine that violates your conscience and your bodily rights. Is that a Christian? Probably not, based on what traditional Christian teaching actually says or what the authority of the church says, morally speaking. Some people will say, well, can you be a Catholic and support abortion? Well, I mean, in some sense, yeah, because you're actually under the judgment of the church. So if you're a Catholic that supports abortion, well, you're in mortal sin. You know, that's the deal. So in that sense, yeah, you can be a Catholic and support abortion. It's just that you're out of a state of grace and you don't want to be there. So you need to go to confession, confess, and then, you know, get contrite and change your views. And the last thing though is that where I think these questions ultimately go though is, you know, can you actually vote for these individuals? You know, can a Christian justify voting for these individuals? And I'm not going to tell you one way or another which one you can vote for. The question ultimately is, well, is it wrong for a political candidate to be politically strategic in order to maintain his political position so that he can do more good than another? Well, it just depends on what he's calling good, because the Bible is very clear that people will call evil good and good evil. And as we saw earlier, it certainly seems like that might be a line that they're flirting with on this IVF and pro-life issue. If you're going to say that it's the pro-choicers who are actually trying to keep the country together and it's those pesky pro-lifers who are, you know, really trying to make things difficult and be divisive and all this stuff. I mean, after all, why can't we just kill a couple kids in order to make life a little better for everyone? Well, I'm just saying, you know, you probably don't want those people discussing whether or not you should be unplugged if you're in a car accident, you know, especially if you have a lot of money. You know, they're probably going to say, hey, look, like, if we let Uncle Ronnie go, you know, all of our lives are going to be a little bit better, you know, all of us. You know, you don't want Donald Trump sitting there, you know, talking about your end of life care. And then I think that is going to be it for today. So, cause we are sitting at like an hour 20. So I am really trying to get this down to like 60 minutes flat, but I'm obviously still working on it, but I really appreciate everybody, listening in. It looks like we had more listeners this time than we did before. And so appreciate you all listening. Don't forget to follow, like, subscribe, comment. Please let me know what you think about all these things that we discussed. And I will catch you next time. I'm Daniel Roberts. And don't forget, keep thinking.